Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Man, I get so jealous when I look at these other teams. Andy Reid's giving a pep talk to the Chiefs dressed as Santa Claus.
That's Andy Reid?
After they clinched the number one seed. I think so. I can tell from the eyes and the belly.
He's got a little elf next to him.
Yeah, he's got...
Oh, that's a special teams coordinator.
Special teams coordinator, and he's got the owner in there with him. That looks like a fun locker room right there.
It
looks like a fun locker room. Guessing a little more fun than the Texans locker room last night.
Well, Texans probably. I'm guessing Laramie Tunsil came in dressed as Santa and was like, hey, this is the big thing
I
planned.
What's going on? And he gave autographed shoes from Mache 275 to everybody.
Yeah, and he probably would have handled, like, he hired 20 little people alongside to, like, come in a choreographed dance or something.
Yeah.
Because I had it planned.
Sorry, guys. I had it booked.
Yeah.
I booked all these little people. Yeah.
Let's be festive.
Didn't think it'd be 31. Would you rather it had been 31-0 yesterday instead of 31-2?
No, because I thought it was a good indication of a kind of a, it told the complete story of the season.
It's
like, even if the only points they scored were Kamari Lassiter, a defensive player, who was able to score a safety because your punter had pinned them down on the 2-yard line.
Over the past 2 years, the Texans have played the Ravens 3 times.
Yeah.
I can list everybody who has scored points counting on just 3 fingers. Kaimi Fairbairn, 13 points.
Good job, Kaimi.
4 field goals.
Except for the miss. Yeah.
And a PAT.
Yeah.
Steven Sims.
Oh, yeah.
Now a Raven.
Mm.
He scored 6 points last year in the playoff game. And Kamari Lassiter scored 2 points. They've scored 21 points in 3 games against the Ravens under D'Amico Ryans and Bobby Slowick.
This is, I'd love to, and I sense this from a lot of listeners who are just like, man, I'm so sick of the Ravens or I hate the Ravens or whatever. I can't even be in a position to hate the Ravens because all they are to me is like a wall. Like they're not, it's not even a human thing. It's just like, it's this wall that you have to figure out how to climb over. And it's a constant reminder that you're just not there. You don't have your tiny little leg muscles cannot climb that wall yet. You got to build up your leg muscles before you can even approach hating the Ravens.
I hate playing the Ravens. I don't hate the Ravens.
I look at the Ravens as like, man, that's what I would like
that's
to be.
That's the gold standard, yeah. That's maybe not the gold standard. The Chiefs are winning all the Super Bowls, but in terms of player evaluation, culture, fear from opponents, it's pretty good.
I feel like I watched Gladiator 2, and the scene in Gladiator 2 is, the big, bad, evil Romans are coming to conquer our empire, so their despotic leader can displace our despotic leader.
Right.
Like, I can't believe that. No, I like this despotic leader. So it's easy to hate Rome, you know? I feel like I'm actually standing at the castle walls being like, I don't know. They got a good thing going. I don't know. Maybe we should just try to emulate them more so than hate them. I don't know.
Well, along those lines, Lamar Jackson, he has schooled the Houston Texans since coming into the NFL. 5-0 against the Texans. Average score of 33-9. That performance yesterday was on a national stage.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen has been the heavy, heavy favorite to win the MVP of the league for the last several weeks. We know it's an award that's based around 2 things, performance and narratives.
Yeah.
That's what the MVP is. Josh Allen has dominated the narrative part of it, and he's been really good performance-wise too, but the narrative part of that, he's dominated really since that Texans game in week 5. It's almost like the Texans did everything they could to prevent an MVP season back in week 5 against Josh Allen, held him to a record low performance, and then they did everything they could yesterday to help Lamar Jackson get back into the race. The Texans really don't want Josh Allen to win the MVP. Dominating him in week 5 and then just spoon-feeding Lamar Jackson an MVP-level performance yesterday.
Yeah.
Did Lamar Jackson, if you had to vote right now, you've seen them both, you've watched them both, not just against the Texans, but all year.
Yeah.
Who would you give it to?
I would give it to Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I think, honestly, and you look at the numbers, very similar to Josh Allen's, except that the really ironic thing is that Lamar Jackson has won two MVPs. I think statistically and performance-wise, I think he's having the best season he's had. Better than either of his two MVP seasons.
Passing the ball better than he ever has.
And so it's more, I could justify giving it to either of them. It's just that the fact that people seem to think it's such a runaway Josh Allen year, that bothers me. Mm-hmm. It bothers me because it's an injustice. And again, I should be hating the Ravens, but I can't. I'm not. The Texans are so far away from where the Ravens are that I can only just stand and look at them in admiration.
Yeah.
And I can look at Lamar Jackson and the way he's developed and what he's become, and I'll look at it with admiration. And now, if they'd won three Super Bowls already, I would hate them just like I hate the Chiefs.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
Yep.
You know, it just, all these Chiefs fans are like, they seem incredulous that people would want to believe that the refs are helping over. Dude, you've won through Super Bowls. That's what happens. You're going to be like, that's just accept it. And like, stop trying to fight. You're not going to ever win that fight.
Right.
Like, people are going to hate you because you're so good.
That's where I'll compliment Patriot fans. They leaned into the hatred.
But they still also felt disrespected and whatever. It got annoying how much they acted like they were disrespected.
The gates were a different.
Well, they had actual evidence of cheating and everything.
Yeah.
Where with the Chiefs, it's more so like, it sure feels like. It doesn't. You and I are different on this. I think good teams do get the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's egregiously in favor of the Chiefs or anything. I don't think there's a conspiracy or anything like a lot of people do.
Oh, I don't differ with you on that. I thought some of the calls in the Texans game, you and I differ on a few of the calls in the game, like the Derek Stingley holding call, you and I differ on. No, I'm with you on that. I'm not a ref blamer.
But it's just like, I look at it as kind of like, listen, you're never going to, you're trying to shut up the haters on social media. Good luck with that. It's not going to happen. It's like Kevin Durant or anybody else. Like, look, dude, you're never going to win.
Yeah.
It's not a battle that's worth fighting.
Right. It's a waste of time. Lamar Jackson yesterday averaged 11.2 yards per pass attempt.
Yeah.
10 of 15 for 168 yards. And I know some people say, well, you know, like 67 of those yards were on a Mark Andrews catch and run. Yeah.
Totally
caused by indecision from Christian Harris that were caused by Lamar Jackson's otherworldly skills.
Right. Because Lamar Jackson was all the way over on the left sideline. The defense shifted way too heavily over to that side, and it left just Christian Harris over there in a bind of, do I come up and try to stop the run? Oh, crap, there goes Mark Andrews.
There goes Mark Andrews.
So that was created by Lamar Jackson.
Yes.
That wasn't like some kind of flukish weird play. That was created by Lamar.
Four carries, 87 yards.
I'll tell you another thing, too.
He averaged 22 yards a carry yesterday.
I'll tell you another thing, Sean.
Yeah.
They've been very healthy. The Ravens are very, very healthy. They've got amongst the fewest number of players on IR this year.
And the guys who are all no-namers.
That's how it works sometimes. Sometimes you got to ride the hot hand when in a year where you're healthy. But I think the thing with the Ravens is a lot of the injuries that other teams have been caused by the Ravens, and they're earned injuries. Like, Joey Porter Jr. is out yesterday, and they struggled. You know, like last week, Joey Porter Jr. went out, and that's when the Ravens started attacking Joey Porter Jr.'s replacement. So now Pittsburgh has to, in a short week, they have to play the Chiefs. And they, without Joey Porter Jr., because the Ravens injured him. Derrick Henry injured Joey Porter Jr. when Joey Porter Jr. tackled Derrick Henry.
By running over him.
Yeah, ran over him on the 4-yard line, and Joey Porter Jr. is out. If the Ravens faced the Steelers in the playoffs, and the Steelers still were without Joey Porter Jr., the Ravens earned that.
They did.
But they also helped out the Chiefs.
They did. Yeah. Yeah, we don't like that part of it. But you're right, man. They're a super physical team, no doubt about it. But Lamar Jackson yesterday, man. He closed that gap, a gap that you don't think should be there for the MVP award. He closed that gap on the odds board.
D'Amico said it before the game. I was surprised he didn't grab more traction. He said that the Lamar is playing the best football he's seen this year.
Yeah.
And he game planned for Josh Allen, remember?
He did. And Jared Goff, who's also in the conversation.
Yeah. Amazing. And he threw shade at Josh Allen.
He did.
You know? He
does that.
I thought that would get picked up by the Bills Mafia.
Yeah. Maybe the lead's so big right now.
Maybe it didn't. I'm not on social media as much anymore.
Yeah. Let's see. One thing the Texans have earned this year, all noon games next year. We are not ready for primetime players. They're not going to get nearly the primetime run, barring an unforeseen run in the postseason.
Oh, well, they turned a Jets game into an actual competitive game by being so bad versus the Jets.
Yeah.
There you go. They provided a good game In an otherwise lackluster matchup.
They did do that. Yeah. They did do that. Yeah, they're just not going to be the marquee team. Unless they, again, make a deep playoff run or they have some sort of sizzly acquisition. I'm hoping that this is not the offseason where they go sizzle again. Mm-hmm. They need a lot more stake on this team.
I think that, look, this is a punch in the nose. This entire season has been a punch in the nose, I think, for some of your offensive players and then also for the organization at large. I think Nick is probably the guy in the organization who was fighting his old man tendencies the most in the offseason. Because you're trying to, like, I understand it's a different generation. These kids are different. We don't want to get in their way. But there was also that one moment where Nick was like, we haven't won anything yet. You know, it was after the draft, or I can't remember what it was. Somebody was trying to praise him for something. And he's like, we haven't won anything yet. We haven't done anything. I would guess that Nick right now is kind of, if I were him, if I put myself in his shoes, there'd be a part of me that would be seething and being like, yeah, when you spend the whole offseason taking in all the rat poison and listening to everybody tell you how awesome you are, and by a bunch of young guys who don't genuinely understand how hard it is to win in the NFL, yeah, you reap what you sow. But also, as an organization, all right, what did we miss offensively as far as Bobby Slowick's plan for the season and for how he adjusted from week to week? And why the offense has gotten steadily worse and then precipitously awful last night. What do we need to fix on that?
And Nick's fingerprints are on that,
right,
too.
Right,
he puts the team together.
Yeah, he's not wired to be the guy that's like, it's all of your faults and none of mine. He's going to wonder, why were we not better prepared for
he
this?
He totally will, and you're 100% right. He was probably the most sane voice in the building when it came to expectations for the team. You know, at least as far as like front-facing people that do interviews and things like that. Like he would, you know, he comes on with us at least once a month, and anything that had to do with prospects for the 2024 season, Super Bowl expectations. I mean, it's a guy who's been on six Super Bowl winning teams.
You know, the whole thing too is it's hard sometimes because it's such a cliche when you say, well, you know, the rest of the league now has film on everybody. But it's true. It's a cliche because it's true. That part of it is true. And then I think, though, sometimes people focus too much on the quarterback himself. Look, there was an ambush factor to Tank Dell last year that I think a lot of teams just... The same thing on the defensive side of the ball happens where teams don't really respect young cornerbacks in their initial breakout season. It's kind of like they go the whole season long and teams like almost don't really...
They keep testing that guy
and he keeps getting interceptions. Yeah. And it's almost like the league is slow to respond to stuff like that. They just almost want you to prove it for a whole year. And those guys proved enough last year that, there was a lot more time spent on how to game plan for Tank Dell, how to game plan for C.J. Stroud, how to game plan for Dalton Schultz. And cumulatively, it really showed up.
There's been no chess move to respond to it.
Yeah.
You know, they've probably done some things, but whatever they're doing is not working. Happy holidays, fellas. This is a text message. Quick question for you. Has the word execution for the D'Amico regime become what versatility was to the O'Brien regime? Every time I hear someone say execution, it irritates me. It rings hollow at this point. I think it bothers me because the implication is this is all on the players.
Right. Yeah.
We're dialing up the plays and we've seen it work before and it's not working.
Whenever I hear a coach talk about execution, you know, they can mean it for multiple different ways. But I think sometimes people hear it and they think, the player's got to go out and execute. But ultimately, and I think most coordinators, when they say execution, they're taking responsibility for it themselves.
Yeah,
the execution is on the coaches.
Right.
Like when a coach, you know, if anybody out there who's a coach, when your team doesn't execute, you feel it yourself. You're like, oh, why are we not executing? Why can I not get them to execute properly? So it's not an excuse. It's an indictment of the coaaching. You know, and yeah, it's not to excuse the players in that role either. And it's hard. It's really hard to talk about this offense because there's so many different areas where they're executing poorly. Position group by position group, you can go down the line. And that's where just from a logical standpoint, it's hard to think that, wow, yeah, all of these guys are performing worse than they have historically because they all just apparently are not good football players anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's all intertwined, and ultimately it comes back on D'Amico Ryans. Why is your offense, because you're the head football coach, you're not the defensive coordinator, you're the head football coach, why is this team heavily weighted by the offense not executing the way they're supposed to execute.
Yep. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. It is a reaction Thursday following yesterday's Wednesday game. Is the tide turning on C.J. Stroud right now in the fan base? C.J. was asked about the booing yesterday at NRG Stadium. What did he have to say about that? We've got a few texts here that are an indicator that at least a few people are concerned, if not maybe even a little angry with the Texans quarterback. So we'll get to that. Coming up next, stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast. Funny, in the press box last night, so the Beyonce concert was at halftime. For those who don't know, the windows are closed in the press box. So we can hear the crowd noise, but it's totally muffled. That's how we know.
They open it up.
They opened it for Beyonce. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's where I was going with this. Yeah, so they keep
it. I wasn't in the press box.
But. Yeah, they keep it closed practically full time, unless there's something going on. Significant at halftime.
Andre Johnson's Ring of Honor.
Yeah,
stuff like that.
Any Ring of Honor stuff, any type of stuff. Andre getting his ring for the Hall of Fame. Any super important thing at halftime, which Beyonce concert is included, they open the windows to the press box with 2 minutes to go in the half. So Adam Spillane, beacon of positivity that he is, leans to me, goes, "Ooh, we're going to hear the Boo Birds loud and clear when they open the window at
the end of the half.
At the end of the half.
They did it with 2 minutes left in the
And within that time frame was D'Amico choosing to punt on fourth and two near midfield.
In Baltimore territory.
Yeah, just the general overall vibe of walking off the field down 17-2 in completely embarrassing fashion. And I'm like, yeah. They are booing. I didn't realize how loud it was out here. Yes, they are. They are booing. They didn't boo Beyonce. That's good. But C.J. Stroud heard the boos. He was asked about the fans booing after the game.
You know what? I mean, people are entitled to their opinions, and you know they care about the game, and you know their emotions matter. You know, so I understand. You know, it's not my first time, and probably won't be my last. So it's not something to internalize and point the finger at yourself. You know, but it is. Something that you can, you know, use it to motivate you to, like, not want those moments anymore. So, you know, I got plenty of football left in my career, hopefully, you know, God willing. And, you know, I know this is going to be a story I'll tell one day to help me in the long run. So, you know, it's part of life, man. You hit a lot of valleys and then you have a lot of mountaintops, you know, and it's cliche, but, you know, they say there isn't, there's not sunny days if there's not days with rain. So, you know, this is a rainy day, but at the end of the day, you know, the sun will rise up tomorrow. You know, we have another crack at this thing next week and, you know, keep rolling.
I like, I get what he was saying with the rainy day, sunny day thing. I'd not heard that cut yet. I was anxious to listen to that fresh. Yeah. I prefer to cling to the 1990s philosopher Butthead from Beavis and Butthead, who said, you have to have stuff that sucks to have stuff that's cool.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty
it's the same
philosophic.
Thing, right? You gotta have rainy days to have sunny days.
Butthead, man.
Yeah. No, Butthead knew what he was talking about, too.
Mike Judge, ultimately.
Right. And then Beavis followed up with a really good commentary. Stuff that sucks.
Ultimately, I do think that this season will be a good one for C.J. Stroud. I think he learned the harsh reality about a lot of things in the NFL, about how hard it is to win. I think if I were going to give credit to CJ at this point, and I'm going to do this in the context of the way young athletes tend to operate these days, man, there have been multiple different dudes around the league just selling out their own teammates, selling out their coaches. You go to A.J. Brown, or you go to Malik Nabers, or various other things. Or there's a lot of guys.
Garrett Wilson, like, holding a sneeze in to not say something.
Yeah, like, they're flat out, like, pointing the finger hardcore. Yeah. Like, CJ has not had any hints of that. So I like that. I think that's tough, and it's tough to do. You know, it's really tough to, it's really easy to shift blame, even if you're doing it imperceptibly. I felt like he has, at the very least, I think he's been accountable for his own poor performances, but he's never even come close that I can remember this season to pointing the finger at the coaches or pointing the finger at other players. Maybe I'm forgetting something. So that part of it's good. And ultimately, this is a good, depending on how it all works out, This is a really good experience for some of those young players offensively to really grasp and understand the reality of what it is to compete in the NFL.
The closest he ever came to that as a Texan was after the Panthers game.
Last year.
Where it was one of their worst performances of the season. it might stack up as one of their better performances this season. Yeah. But last season, it was really bad, and they lost to a team that hadn't won a game yet.
Yeah.
And in the press conference, he critiqued what he thought they needed to do more.
Needed
on
to
offense.
Push the ball downfield.
Without
more.
Saying Bobby Slowick's name, yeah. I think he was saying, "Hey, Bobby, we need to push the ball down the right. Push the ball."
So
down
I guess
the
you know what?
More.
Then the question also becomes: all right, how much of all right? If there's things that we're upset with Bobby Slowick not doing, how much of it is resistance from his quarterback? Is there an avenue for that? I don't feel like believing that that's the case right now, but it's a possibility.
Sure.
You know, and again, ironically enough, the debate for years in Baltimore was, all right, is Greg Roman the offensive coordinator the issue, or is it that he can only do so much with Lamar Jackson? That's where it comes to the head coach to make the right decision. And you could argue, now, given the way that Lamar Jackson has played under a new offensive coordinator these last couple years, and especially this year, yeah, maybe they waited too long to make a change at offensive coordinator. Or maybe Lamar Jackson just needed to mature. I don't know. But in that instance, man, that's Lamar Jackson looks like the best version of himself he ever has in his career.
Yeah.
And it's in his second year with a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So it wasn't whatever was holding back Lamar Jackson, whether it was Greg Roman or his maturity or whatever it was, it's not holding them back no more.
Well, it's almost like he spent the summer or the offseason with a throwing coach, too.
Yeah.
Like, he is a better, more polished passer of the football.
Throwing outside the numbers, which used to be the old narrative on him, is, I can't throw outside the numbers. And then Ravens fans would get angry and say, well, no, look, here he is throwing outside the numbers. And it was like when he was
rolling
out and on the side. Like, no, he's basically throwing to the center of the field.
Outside the numbers, yeah. Seth. Outside the numbers.
But now he's attacking outside the numbers from the pocket, against blitzes, everything else like that. He is a polished passer. But oh, by the way, yeah, he can still run for a 48-yard touchdown with ease.
Yeah. He's crazy good, man. Text message. I'm gonna be honest. Stroud has annoyed me since day one. Can't put my finger on it, but I think he comes off as too preachy or something. Definitely wouldn't cheer for him if he wasn't on the Texans. Also, dude has a punchable face. Jay Reed.
He's gone way into it.
Yeah, man. You went from 0 to 100 in 25 words, bro.
He's entered punchable face territory. He's always had the potential for a punchable face, but it was going to depend on what his performance is.
Performance.
I think the difference with CJ, and this is where it pulls it back, is that I think with CJ, part of him maturing as an NFL quarterback is that he's on the sliding scale of whether an athlete cares too little or too much, I think there's times where, like, he cares deeply.
Yeah.
And there is an element of sometimes, like, being able to check out emotionally and not overreact or be too hard on yourself. You know, and these are squishy things to talk about. It's impossible to know exactly what's going on in somebody's brain. But I don't worry about him caring too little.
No.
Romo had a punchable face partly because, just as it is with him as a broadcaster, you get the sense sometimes that, like, this dude is just out there winging it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It's a paycheck.
Yeah, player, yeah. Or with some younger guys, you're wondering, like, I don't know if this guy just gets it. I think CJ gets it.
Yes.
But he's still young. He's still very young.
Yep. You know what I'm angry about yesterday's game? Well, on the long list of things I'm angry about.
Yeah.
We have not talked about this yet. There was a dust-up in the pregame.
Oh, yeah.
Between Joe Mixon and Ravens backup quarterback Josh Johnson,
right.
I believe.
That's how it culminated, or at least how we first heard about it.
Right.
This is what happened. I'll tell you what I know. Like, it sounds like I've spoken to multiple people about this.
Okay.
And what I know for sure is that Joe Mixon was warming up and had his headphones on, I believe. I'm not 100% positive on that. But the Ravens punter was punting to, like, within 5 yards of Joe Mixon, as Joe Mixon was doing his own little warm-up in the end zone. And the ball kept landing
right near him,
right near Joe Mixon. And Joe Mixon had an issue with it. At some point, Joe Mixon started taking each of the balls that landed and throwing them into the stands.
I saw that.
Yeah. So then there was some kind of a confrontation between between the special teams coach for the Ravens and, I don't know if it was Frank Ross or another special teams or another Texan staffer.
So there was coach on coach.
They got
violence.
Into it, and then at one point, the Ravens special teams coach, like, pointed at Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
And that's when Joe Mixon was like, oh no, oh, that's how it's going to be, huh? So there was, so Joe Mixon went and confronted somebody, and there was some kind of a melee, and I think maybe Josh Johnson was stepping in as a peacekeeper or something. There were too many names and people involved from different people that I'm hearing this from. But remember, the Ravens were the team that last year, Travis Kelce got into it with Tucker and the holder, I think. Yeah, because they were in their area.
Yeah.
So, and apparently...
In the pregame warm-ups.
In the pregame warm-ups. So, the part that's dicey is there's a certain time during warm-ups where the special teamers are basically given the entire field.
Yeah.
So, Joe Mixon may have been in the wrong, but it kind of got... As far as him being upset about it.
Sure.
But it sounds like it could have been handled better by perhaps the coaches or the adults in the room or whatever else it might be. I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked that Joe Mixon was throwing the balls into the stands.
Oh, it's just funny.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah, that's funny.
I thought, we're in for a... They're going to get a juicy grudge match here. We're about to have a bad... Wasn't a battle.
Man, I feel... Okay. Now you're reminding me. I feel bad for Mixon. Mixon and Nico Collins I feel bad for right now.
Yeah.
Because I think those two guys are swarmy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. We've gone 45-degree angle in on the offense today.
Who's bonafide swarm on the offense?
Nico.
Yeah.
Mixon.
Yeah. Tank.
Tank when he's out there.
I would say Tank when he's out there.
I would say... We're still on none of the offensive linemen.
Right, and I think some of them have a scrappiness to them, but you can't be swarm until you're actually a good player.
Good at football is a key.
Like, Kendrick Green hustles his butt off. I love the way he plays, but he's got deficiencies.
Is Cade Stover swarmy? Is he not good enough yet?
He's got the potential for it, but I think, I mean, he came out and played 10 days after an appendectomy.
Okay.
So he's got the potential for it.
Okay, but he's not officially swarmy. He doesn't get his swarm badge.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Are we dancing
around the issue here? CJ Stroud's been in the circle of swarm 3 times this year, but has not been in it
since
week 5.
Right.
And conversely, has been the player upgrade in the Jonathan Alexander, John McClain segment in the pregame, like 8 straight weeks now.
And honestly, I don't want to listen. Like many of our listeners, I got tired of the Lifetime movie that I watched last week, which was the Texans responding to Tank Dell's injury. Enough emo.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, all right, you know what? He was emotional in the moment, you know, got himself together and went out and played. He looked like he was emotionally rattled last night still.
Yeah, he did.
There's a certain level of stoicism. It's not toxic masculinity. Like, I don't think Kim Mulkey suffered from a lack of stoicism in terms of just... I can't remember a time Kim Mulkey got so distraught emotionally that it affected her coaching.
This is not a gender issue. Yeah.
You could argue she wasn't stoic in terms of, kind of like with Bobby Knight. Like, losing your temper isn't all that stoic either.
True.
But there's a certain... When you're in a leadership position of that, you got to detach yourself emotionally at times when everybody else might be emotional.
If Angel Reese had gone down with an injury in the tournament...
Yeah.
Kim Mulkey would not have been sobbing on the sidelines.
Right, right. She would have been, like, the other side of the extreme is, so it's not a male-female thing, it's not a gender thing.
No.
It's a position of leadership thing.
Yes.
You know, the extreme example is, okay, you're a lieutenant in a wartime situation. Generally frowned upon for them to break down sobbing in the middle of a battle.
I would not want to live in a country where that army is doing
Actually got killed dead.
Yes.
You know?
Got to keep going.
You got to keep going. You got to keep moving forward. But I was going to all right, I'm not going to worry about all that. This is a little too Lifetime for me. But then CJ goes out there and has the worst performance of his career. And it's impossible for me not to wonder if there's a certain toughening that needs to happen here.
It's not an unfair hypothesis.
Yeah. This offense in general is way too emo. And I'm like that listener said, okay, at the end of the day, I don't need life lessons from a 23-year-old about how you're going to forge ahead and overcome this tragedy and all of this other stuff. When it's at the end of the day, it was a really bad orthopedic injury. It wasn't cancer. It wasn't somebody that got killed in a train accident. It's stuff that happens on a football field. I'm going to tell CJ this. If you play 15 more years, you're going to see multiple close friends of yours have horrific injuries.
Yes.
It happens.
Yeah.
It does. But you're the leader of the team. You have to forge ahead and not let it affect you emotionally. Yesterday, It's just all like he has been a bad, bad quarterback, not just with his errant throws, but his decision making, everything else. He's taken sacks that he should have never taken ever since Tank Dell got injured. Yeah. It's been really, really bad.
Yep.
And like, you got to let it go, man. Yep. That's like, this is life. You got to let it go. You're a leader.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, he's been out to lunch.
You don't have to let it go in the personal side of things.
No.
But on the football side of things, that is not what you are.
Between the lines, absolutely.
If you guys are going to talk about their various things and use football coaches love to use football analogies for or military analogies and everything, but when it comes down to crunch time, like, man, those dudes in the military are dealing with life and death situations.
Yep.
And if you want to emulate people that are that elite, and we'll never be elite. In like common society, we're never going to be as elite as a world-class surgeon or a special ops guy in the military.
Five-star general,
because those are life and death situations. Yeah. But if you want to emulate those people, then in basically what is adult make-believe, the world of professional sports, you got to be more emotionally tough than that.
Absolutely. All right, this is where I want people to weigh in on the text page here. I'm going through some of the reviews yesterday. How did Netflix do? If you watch this game on Netflix and watch the halftime show, how did they do? Not just in terms of the buffering and the presentation. How was their selection of announcers? How was the production value of the whole thing? I've seen some good. I've seen some not so good. I'm curious what people think. Weigh in 713-572-4610. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Pendergast.
Dan Pendergast. I asked the people about Netflix. If you watched it on Netflix, how did it go? And this is, the feedback's been pretty good. I was listening to a couple national shows on the way in, Seth, and they were talking about Netflix. Obviously, neither of the games lived up to the hype, especially the Texans. But apparently the presentation was good. This is a text message. Everything about Netflix was 10 times better than Prime, but just like Prime, the announcers sucked big time.
I think part of that is, I've only heard parts of the Texans broadcast, and I just love Greg Olsen, so I enjoyed that part of it. I think that there's always, in a one-off production like this, there's zero chemistry between some of the announcer or some of the color commentary.
Yeah, it was Ian Eagle, Nate Burleson, and J.J. Watt on the Steeler-Chiefs game. I don't think they've ever worked. I don't know if J.J.'s ever done commentary on a game before.
And I do think this is something that they do. When they bring in a new guy that's never done it before, they tend to do a three-man booth. And I feel like that's actually harder than a two-man booth. I think they think like, okay, JJ won't have to carry the load or anything.
Harder for everybody.
It's really hard to figure out when you're supposed to talk, when you're supposed to chime in if you've never done it before. Even if you're a veteran broadcaster, three people is a lot harder. It's a third body problem. It makes everything way more complex. I heard positive reports on JJ, but that's obviously most of my Twitter followers are going to be pretty positive.
Leans
JJ.
Positive, yeah. JJ. Yeah. Text message, Netflix did awesome on the strength of Kay Adams being so damn fine. That's from Titan Scott. Netflix was fine once it was on. This is another text message. Once it was on, I forgot it was Netflix. Seemed like a regular big game. It was nice to have Greg Olsen. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I like having Greg Olsen a lot.
I thought that in terms of what I saw from who they picked to do the games.
Yeah.
It's hard to quibble with Greg Olsen. He was doing the Texans game with Noah Eagle, who's Ian Eagle's son, who's like a prodigy in this. He's like 27 years old, and he does his full-time work for NBC. But the networks all seem to put their weapons down for this Netflix stuff and allow their people to go do the Netflix broadcast, which is interesting because all of these outlets, and this is where the Netflix participation gets very interesting. If they did do well, I think the NFL is obviously rooting for them to do well. The irony of all these outlets loaning their talent to Netflix is that Netflix is going to be a huge player the next round of media rights.
Well, but I think, though, too, is it looked like it was a CBS broadcast.
CBS did the production of it.
And so that's where I think if the networks are going to, if Netflix kind of like farms that part of it out to the networks themselves, then the networks are probably thinking, or maybe there's maybe they've had talks about like there's going to be some revenue sharing or something.
Maybe. I'm purely thinking about just Netflix driving the price up the next time that the bidding happens.
Yeah.
Because who knows where the pure streaming outlets are versus the ones that are a combo of streaming and over the top, like CBS and NBC.
I don't want to get this, network. I don't want this to get into too much inside baseball or anything, but I know that the one thing about the streaming stuff is that it's not as simple as us lay folk would think it would be. Like, oh, you just slap it on the internet, right? So that I think there's kind of a respect for the fact that Netflix has been doing it, and when it comes to the streaming game, can teach the network some things.
Yeah,
so
maybe.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Maybe.
But anyway, I didn't hear anything about glitchiness in the stream, right?
Did you? No. The only I was reading Richard Deitch's review of it on The Athletic. He's their media critic, and the only real bad glitch happened right at the very beginning. There were audio issues with the pregame for the Steelers and the Chiefs, which probably came on at like 11 o'clock our time. That was a noon kick. So there were some audio issues, but no buffering issues that I heard about. Nothing even close to the criticism of the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight.
I had the halftime show going on my phone as I drove back to the studio at halftime, and so I never had any issues at all. Like, for whatever that's worth, it seems like people were pretty happy with everything.
People were happy. The things I heard people being most happy with Netflix was the quality of the picture, really, really good. Like, just very crisp.
That's like what I would say with Apple TV, with a baseball.
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's like, man, it's just crisp.
It's very crisp.
Yeah.
I heard a lot of praise from Mina Kimes.
Yeah.
Mina Kimes was doing she was on the studio show out of L.A., which was being skippered by Kay Adams. She was steering the ship. And it was Mina Kimes, Manti Te'o, and RG3.
Yeah.
RG3 roundly criticized by a lot of people because I just think he annoys people.
He annoys people.
He's corny.
With Manti Te'o, and I watched none of it, I got just angry because, like, what is this? Why is this guy? Oh, wait a second. He's a good college player. Had a nice little go of it in the NFL, but like, has he come up through the ranks all of a sudden to where he's a broadcasting phenom or something?
He's not, obviously.
Why the hell is this guy like up there? At least RG3. I know he's not everybody's cup of tea, but he's got a lot of the makings of a good broadcast TV person. He's got a big personality,
big energy,
and everything. All like Manti Te'o's the opposite. He's got a.
He's still a big name.
He's a big name.
Yeah.
But as far as his personality and everything else goes,
he's very low key.
Yeah.
He's very. I'm with you on that.
But I'm open to it. Like, was there anything insightful or anything? Was anybody impressed with Manti Te'o?
No. The sense I got, like I said, was that people thought Mina Kimes was the one bringing the most to that particular studio show, to the extent that people were going, well, this is proof that all the ones that, you didn't play, you can't analyze it. Like, this is a bad day for those people.
I've never understood. With Mina Kimes especially, like, people come at her all the time and say she's a DEI hire and everything. I'm watching her routinely on television sitting next to people who clearly have not done the same level of work that she has and, like, clearly aren't as smart as she is. And I'm trying to figure out, like, it's fine if you disagree with her or you don't like her takes or something, but my God, she's smart. Like,
she clearly understands football and puts the work in.
I honestly don't understand a lot of the Mina Kimes criticism. Other than that, like, I get it. Like, some people just don't, they're never going to like women talking about sports.
Well, football
or
will always be a high testosterone zone for a lot of people.
But when your criticism is you never played the game, like, all right, well, then you should be rallying at Skip Bayless and all these other guys, too. Yeah, you know, like, it's not a male-female thing.
No.
Some of the highest-paid sports media people were not athletes at all.
No.
It's not just that they didn't play football. They were just not. They were classic sports nerds.
Colin Cowherd and Jim Rome make a lot of money.
There's your buddy that at the lunch table could tell you the box score of all the baseball games and everything.
Yeah, that was me. I'll tell you what. Good day for the NFL. At least, maybe I'm too immersed in game day with the Texans. The coverage seems to be way more about the NFL on Christmas that we're watching on the TV in here than the NBA on Christmas.
Uh-huh.
There's this feeling out there like, oh, here comes the NFL invading the one day on the calendar that the NBA had to themselves. That did not stop LeBron after yesterday's 115-113 win over the Warriors. The Lakers won with a late layup from Austin Reeves. Steph had just tied it with a three. It's a really good game. It was a really good game.
The world was amazed. Because that's the NBA's day.
Global.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Day, right. LeBron was getting interviewed after the game. His 19th Christmas Day game in his career. That is remarkable. However, what he's about to say here, not quite as remarkable. Here was LeBron James kind of flexing on the NFL a little bit after yesterday's thriller in San Francisco.
I love the NFL. I love the NFL. But Christmas is our day.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Dude, you're going to get killed in the ratings by the NFL.
Did we cut it off? Did he go on to say he invented Christmas?
No. He may have.
He's like, nobody ever thought to celebrate Jesus' birthday until I came up with it.
Taco Tuesday, barbershop talk.
Yeah. Then Christmas. I identified an obscure saint and turned him into a lovable fat man.
Right.
Santa Claus.
Right.
That was me. He trademarked it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we're going to give gifts to everybody.
That feels like some British dude who's over there right now standing up in a pub somewhere in, like, I don't know, Worcestershire, England?
Liverpool.
I'll tell you what. We've got them all on the run. This is the world bows to Britain, they do. We got the whole colonies everywhere.
Colonies.
Just wait until they see our 7-sail ship sail into their harbor. Then we'll give them the what for?
The 50 colonies.
Yes.
Oh, man, that is great.
Greatest empire in the world, we all.
Tells you, yeah.
Was I anywhere close to a British accent?
It was fine.
One of our beloved listeners yesterday was criticizing my New York accent.
Said it sounds too much like Boston.
I'm like, listen, I get rid of the R and that's it.
Yeah.
All right, Philly.
Yeah.
Philly, New York, Boston, it's all the same accent for me. I just delete R and then there we go.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the same vibe in all those cities anyways.
Yeah.
Just yelling at each other and stuff. Yeah, man, LeBron. Odds that LeBron gets memed when the NFL ratings come out and they're going to have that screenshot of LeBron.
Christmas is our day.
Yeah.
Christmas is the NBA's day, man.
Yeah.
Well, plus, at least, like, unlike the British Empire, the NBA has never been the number one major league sport.
No, it
went from baseball to football.
It did.
And that's pretty much the story.
Agreed. Yep. All right, into the 9 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Thursday.
It's Boxing Day.
It is Boxing Day in Canada and a Reaction Thursday in this studio. There's a doctor online, and I checked, and he's definitely a doctor. 112,000 Twitter followers, which qualifies you to be a doctor.
I think I know who it is, and I've muted that guy, but go ahead, yeah.
He laid out, we now have more information on Tank Dell's injury.
Yeah, yeah.
He laid out the road ahead of Tank Dell, and, well, we'll lay it out for you. I'll let you guys react to it. We'll lay it out for you coming up.